Yeah. So how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing pretty good. You know, I've had a successful week. A lot of interesting things have happened to me. I've gotten a lot of design work done.
Ooh, nice, nice.
I did. I was kind of struggling with a project I was working on, and then I actually talked to someone who does a similar thing, and it gave me a lot of inspiration. So that helped.
Nice. That's really, that's always good when you sort of have a, you know, a week that's very full of, like, you know, once you get going, it seems like it sort of pushes the other work in the right direction.
What helps is when you have someone you can steal ideas from.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. You can steal them, make them your own, and then make them better.
And then make them better.
Oh, yeah. That's the best part.
Yeah. No, so it's a little bit different. I was working on some gesture control stuff, and I toured in a company that does a similar product. I toured Matayo, and they do augmented reality, which is a pretty different thing. But
it, yeah. I mean, it kind of pushed you in the right direction, which works. So,
not as big as your week, of course.
No, I mean, my week was like, it was sort of big. For the listeners that don't know, I'm still a student and starting my third year in college. Sort of, I mean, it was...
Or as we like to say, Universidad.
The moving into my apartment was kind of stressful and everything. By the third time, by your first day of college, it becomes very anticlimactic and pretty much just the easiest day of the year. So that was nice.
You go to class for like 6 minutes total.
Like
just enough to get syllabuses and leave. Syllabi.
No, I mean, we had those a few teachers.
Wait, tangent here. Do you know what the plural for octopus is? This is honestly the most important thing you can possibly know.
The plural of octopus?
The plural of octopus.
Octopussy?
Octopussy would be my guess too when I first learned, which is not what it is, as much as you might want it to be. No, so it's actually, octopus is based on a Greek word, or maybe is a Greek word. And so the way to pluralize things in Greek, to my understanding here, is to say paedy. So it's actually octopaedy.
Oh, that would make
multiple octopus is octopaedy.
It's not as fun as octopussy.
It's not as fun as octopussy. And I think probably about as unclear as octopus.
Yeah. But I would be confused if somebody said, I got attacked by an octopussy. I'd be very confused. But yeah, you know, school started.
Let's jump back.
It's going well. That's about it on my end, except last night I had sort of the biggest event in a long time happen to me via Twitter.
Yeah, as they always do.
Oh, yes. Every big event in life happens on Twitter. We'll see. I was driving yesterday afternoon, and I was listening to the podcast Unprofessional. Really, really good podcast. And they had Amy Jane Gruber on there as a special guest. Actually, I think they called her a very, very special guest. And
this was the first episode of it too. Like, that's a pretty big get for your first ever episode.
Yeah, that's a big guest. She's a wonderful guest. So I enjoy listening to her. I've heard her when she was a guest on Let's Make Mistakes. And I tweeted at her, Amy Jane, please make your own podcast so I can stop listening to anything else. Because I think if she had her own podcast, I would just stop listening to every other sort of talk show podcast and just listen to that. And if she didn't have enough episodes, I would just listen to them again and again.
Just loop them. See, I was thinking you meant that you just would stop listening to music. You'd stop listening.
No.
You'd mute your TV and just only listen to... Okay, all right.
But I would...
Well, it's still a pretty lofty statement. So, yeah. So you tweeted at Amy Jane saying that you would like to listen to nothing but her.
Nothing but Amy Jane. I want her to have her own podcast. That's really all I wanted. And I woke up in the morning... And she had tweeted at me. I'm gonna pull out my phone and read it, even though I know what it says, just because I love looking at it.
You're like a little kid back in school that like has to peek inside their desk to see that their ruler is still there.
Yeah, I'm like a little kid at school who has to like peek and like see that he still got the A on his spelling test. This is like an A spelling test. So it says at Tom Wixo.
Well, for you.
Shut up. your jealousy is coming out because you didn't get this tweet last night.
That's true.
Says, at Tom Wixo, I think I love you.
Which is really all you could ever dream or hope for.
Like, I mean, that is really all I could ever hope for. It's like, I would say that Amy Jane currently is more popular in the nerd tech community than Princess Leia. Currently.
Old. And, you know, that is considering that we did just finish Celebration 6, I think it was. You familiar with Celebration 6?
No, I'm not.
Okay, so there's this celebration that happens in Florida. It's a Star Wars thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just kind of celebrating Star Wars and all the fandom. And, of course, you get people doing cosplay.
Yeah.
Which is a fancy way of saying people dressing up in costume. And tons of different panels with fans or people that make things or, you know, the people that make video games will often go and host things and blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
Maybe we'll save this for a future episode. There was a commercial for a new television program that is, some would say related to Star Wars and others would say killing Star Wars. So
could be both. To kill something, you have to be related to it.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. Some people might say it's official canon, and other people kind of want to live on a different planet now.
Oh, yeah.
It's not good. It's not, but we can leave that for another episode.
Yeah, it seems like too big of a topic for right now, but yeah.
So you got a tweet. Not only a tweet from Amy Jane, who's a pretty funny tweeter.
Yeah. Maybe that was it. I mean...
But it was that she said she loved
me. Yeah, I mean, it could have been a joke. She could have been making fun of me.
Could have. This could have been.
I don't even care. I really don't.
No, I think it was on the level. I think it was serious.
I can hope so.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's that. That was my big event for the year.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Bigger than moving back and starting school again, of course.
Way bigger. Yeah. So, what? I mean, you said you're just out there still kind of bumming around.
Yeah, so I've been going through a bunch of different interviews for a bunch of different companies.
Nice.
And what's pretty common around here is to have interviewers kind of do the first preliminary interview really quick, get to know the company, get to know the mission of the company, and then the company's obviously getting to know me.
Yep.
And if it seems like a good fit at all, what they do is assign a relatively small task, some design problem that needs to be solved, and say, you know, here's X amount of time, go do this, and then, you know, come back and show it, and then we can, you know, go from there. And in one way, it's to prove that you actually know how to do some sort of designing. And in another, it's kind of to weed out people that are maybe less serious.
Yeah.
It can be really crummy, because... it is kind of doing unpaid work or doing spec work.
Do they use that work that you give them?
And so they'll never use it, I assume. I mean,
that's a little bit maybe better.
I've never done it and then been at a company where I've had to do it and been hired on afterwards. So maybe if I do a good enough job, they would want to use it. But it's not like I'm going to ship them this product and then they're going to use it.
So
it isn't purely spec work.
Okay. But you're still doing it for free, which is kind of too bad. But
yeah, and I'm more willing to do it because it seems like it's pretty commonplace. That's one reason. And because I don't really have a lot of connections or experience in this area.
Yeah.
So I guess I kind of understand why they might need me to prove myself, mm-hmm. even though this is not necessarily an awesome way to prove myself. Another reason that I'm really actually happy to do it is that it gives me more insights into the company and it gives me more ideas on if it's the sort of work that I actually want to do.
Yeah.
And
I, so obviously it sort of keeps you working.
Yeah. I mean, I was given this project and I wasn't given a specific time frame for it. And the first few days I of course didn't really do anything. It took me a little while to get started. Mm-hmm. And once I got started, I mean, I knew from the beginning that I enjoyed the specific problems I was given. Once I got started, I was actually able to move through it, and I'm about 80% done right now.
Oh.
I was actually able to move through things really quickly, and I have done work and then realized that it's wrong and fixed it, which is a really good sign, because if you do something and then realize that it's wrong, it means you actually care about what you're working on, and it means you actually have some potential to be able to solve the problems. Whereas I've done it before, and I've been assigned something and then I'll do it and I have no way of knowing if it's right or wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Generally, that means to me that I probably don't know much about the content or I don't really care about it.
Yeah.
But that also could be a problem. It could mean that the company is giving me an unfair challenge because this isn't really a real way to design because I don't have the resources that I would need to actually do the work.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that maybe that's all part of it, you know, like the things that you care about and the projects that you really want to do, you'll probably find yourself doing the research yourself.
Yeah, to an extent, yeah. But on some level, it's like this company has been around for a couple years and they've done tons of work to figure out how to do things. And so they already have an idea. And so I'm going in to pitch some new features to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they already know the right way to do the things I'm pitching, I think. I assume they already know the right way to do it. And I've had some open dialogue with the people in charge, and I've asked them some questions about things, and they've steered me in the right direction. So I don't feel like they're just like putting me on an island and expecting me to build a boat by myself. But there is an element of kind of like I feel like I'm going to go in and pitch it, and they already know the answer. And so hopefully they're just looking more at how I worked through the specific project. And since they're not designers, because I'm being hired by people that aren't designers,
mm-hmm.
they'll be able to see that I can work. And, you know, a designer could look at a different project I did and see my workflow and understand it. Someone who doesn't really know about design might have more trouble with that. So since I'm working on something that they know about, they'll be able to have some common language and they'll see how I work.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. And it gives them, like you said, not even necessarily proves you in how your work and comes out, but it maybe proves to them if you're going to be somebody who your process works well with the way they do things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's pretty neat though. Good. Best of luck.
Yeah. To you. I'm pretty excited. Thanks. Thanks, man.
Yeah. So, should we, just kind of pop into some of these commercials here?
You want to talk? Let's open up this link. So it's one link that goes to all of the videos, right?
Yep, it's one link. All of them are all one.
All right. So maybe we should describe what's happening in all of them. Does that seem fair?
Yeah, I think because right now there's just too many for the audio to make sense, I think. So I think we can help, kind of.
Yeah. So this first one, which I've already started... a guy dressed up nicely, he's wearing slacks and a shirt and tie, comes into his house, he's got a cat, and he starts cooking. You see, you know, he's kind of making things. And then you see a woman come up to the door, and she's on the outside of the apartment. She goes to unlock the door, which is really good because we're kind of understanding a lot about these characters, right? Like, he unlocked the door and she unlocked the door, so now we know they both live here. It's probably husband and wife, blah, blah, blah. The cat is on a counter. The cat knocks the pot that's on the stove filled with this red liquid onto the ground. So now there's red liquid all over the ground. And then the cat jumps to the floor. The guy who has been chopping vegetables picks the cat up by its neck and in one hand is holding the cat and in the other is holding a knife. And then there's all the red stuff on the floor.
Looking like blood, obviously.
Looking like blood. And so that's kind of the premise for all of these is that there's someone in an awkward situation. And then the text comes on screen and says, "Don't judge too quickly. We won't. AmeriQuest Mortgage Company."
And then the next one is a dad in a car with what appears to be his daughter and some of her friends. And they stop mm-hmm. at a convenience store to buy gum. And then the dad leans over out his window to hand his daughter some money to go into the store. And cops pull up behind him. Looks as if he's with a woman of the night.
Yeah, she's wearing like a skirt and kind of leaning down to his window. So the third commercial is a couple doctors standing in a hospital, and then there's a mother and a daughter riding a helicopter. There's a mother and a daughter. I'm just going to go ahead and re-explain this commercial because I just lost my train of thought because I was watching it and I don't need to be watching it. So there's two doctors. Okay. There's two doctors
standing by a hospital bed. There's an unconscious man in the bed. One of the doctors is reading a chart, and then it cuts to a woman and her daughter in an elevator. They've got a balloon, and the mom is saying, "Daddy's going to be excited." It cuts back to the doctors, and one of them is using the defibrillator to kill a fly. So he shocks the fly out of the air. The other doctor leans down and looks at him on the chest of the guy and says, "Well, that killed him," right as the mother and daughter are walking in. So you've got a doctor holding a defibrillator and another doctor saying, "That killed him." A guy in a hospital bed.
The look on that little girl's face when she hears that is priceless.
She's doing a pretty good job of acting.
Yeah, that's a good face for a kid that age.
All right, you want to explain the fourth one?
Yeah, the fourth one is a airplane. The lights are all off. Looks like a long flight. A lot of people are sleeping. Woman at the window seat has two men on the seat next to her, and she gets up to try to go to the bathroom. And right as she's crawling over one of the men, turbulence hits. She falls on the man, sort of straddles him. Her blouse comes unbuttoned, and the lights on the plane turn on. Everybody looks, and it looks quite inappropriate. These two people look like they're about to, do that. And then it says, like all the other ones, "Don't judge too quickly. We won't." I mean, all sort of the same theme.
Yeah.
All pretty funny. Very funny, I guess.
I don't think the last one is funny. The fifth one...
You described that
to
one.
Me.
I mean,
so this one feels like they kind of ran out of ideas because it's a more abstract idea. So there's a guy in a park with his dog, and he's eating like an eclair or something that's dark and brown or black, and he drops it behind the dog, and then an old woman and presumably her granddaughter are looking at the man. He leans down and picks up the black chocolate from behind the dog, and then he takes a bite of it, and it looks like he of course picked up the dog's droppings. A little bit too happenstance, although maybe more likely than any of the other commercials. It didn't fall at quite the right time, and I didn't really think it was funny.
Yeah, I do have to take into consideration that since I watched all five of these in order, as soon as I saw the guy eating his, chocolate dessert, I knew what was going to happen.
So that's true.
Kind of came into play of why I didn't think it was quite as funny as the other ones.
So like the dad with his daughter and then her friends is clearly uncomfortable by the music they're picking, and he doesn't like it's screaming 13-year-old girl, so it's not going to be fun for anyone, but he's like going along with it. They go out to get gum or whatever from the gas station. And you really get the feeling like this is a good dad.
Yeah.
And then the cops come, and it's like, oh, man, they really did a good job of making it look like he was a John.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The look on his face, like, if you just saw that look and you hadn't seen the previous bit of the commercial, you would totally think he was a John. And it's really, really well done.
Yeah, the way making the that lights joke. Hit his eyes and get all... Oh. Mm-hmm.
That's definitely the best one.
Yeah. I enjoyed the cat one, but we all know why.
Yeah. Because you like cooking?
Yeah, because I like threatening cats with knives and spaghetti sauce.
So the cat one is the most complicated setup,
yeah.
Right? It's a bunch of things that really need to hit at just the right time.
That one...
And I think it's a little more cerebral. It's not quite as obvious of humor.
Yeah.
It's also darker, and I think that makes it funnier as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it speaks to a smaller audience when it's darker. But mm-hmm. the smaller audience that it speaks to, like you said, it's a little bit funnier. I guess my only dislike for the commercials, we often say that one of our gauges for what makes a commercial successful is if it's something that we're going to tell our friends mm-hmm. to look at. These commercials all fit that criteria. I would totally show these to anybody that I am friends with, because I think they're funny. I think most of my friends would think they're funny. The issue is I didn't really know what product they were selling until that last 3 seconds when they said, "I see Ameriquest mortgage." And even now, I don't think Ameriquest and I don't think mortgage when I think those commercials.
That's exactly the same criticism that I have, that these are really successful commercials up until the entire point of a commercial, which is to sell the brand. And I guess in a sense, they're successful because I don't know of any mortgage brands or companies related to mortgages except AmeriQuest right now. So I guess if I wanted a mortgage, I would be more likely to pick AmeriQuest because I have some brand familiarity right now.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's the whole point of these commercials, because I don't think that they're going to advertise thinking like, yeah, this will get a bunch of people to come get new mortgages. As much as it'll say, when people are looking for mortgages, they'll remember our name.
Yeah. Or they'll, I mean, they might not even remember AmeriQuest, but they might remember, do you remember those funny commercials we watched? Those were mortgage ads. Then they, you know, click on the YouTube link they have saved on their computer, find out it's AmeriQuest.
That seems a lot less likely to me than just good old fashioned subliminal messaging.
Yeah,
good old fashioned remembering the logo from an end of a commercial thing.
Once I leave the room by tomorrow afternoon, I don't think I'm going to remember AmeriQuest, even when I'm thinking of mortgages.
I bet if you saw their logo, so if like 6 months from now you've forgotten these commercials altogether, mm-hmm. I bet if you see their logo, it will have some amount of familiarity with you.
Yeah, I guess that's. We'll see in 6 months if I see the logo.
when you're buying your next house.
Yeah, my next house. I do think that it's a hard thing though with when you're selling something like mortgages to really have a successful ad, especially a video commercial that really sells the brand with it still being a commercial that people want to watch.
Yeah, this to me is different from any insurance company or banking commercial I've seen in that it's actually legitimately funny.
Yeah.
And I think it probably appeals to a wide enough group that most of the people who see these will think that they're on some level funny.
And
I don't know if that really is. Yeah, I mean, I suppose that's good.
I also think that, like you said, the way that you described how these commercials work, with sort of the subliminal message 6 months down the road, when I'm thinking of a mortgage, I'm going to think of AmeriQuest, is very effective, because I don't think people get mortgages because they saw a commercial. I think it's something you got to watch, store it in their bank. 6 months down the road, they think of you.
Yeah, or 5 or 10 years or whatever.
Presumably
AmeriQuest will still be selling mortgages then.
10 years.
And so do you think that we're the target audience for these commercials, being kind of, early 20s, not ready for a mortgage now or not planning a mortgage now, but definitely, at some point in our lives will be?
I think it definitely speaks to a younger audience. I think a little bit older than us maybe. But in our general area of, because I mean, really, if you think about it, most people getting mortgages are within 5 years of us.
Yeah, I have no idea if that's true or not, but I could go along with it.
Most people getting
mortgages, I wouldn't have a hard time believing that.
Probably are.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, unless something bad happened with the first mortgage you had, I feel like, I guess I don't know this, I'm just saying it off the few personal experience I have with close family members that have bought homes, is that once you get a mortgage with one bank, you buy another home, you do something, you usually use that same bank.
You stick with the same bank. Yeah, that's true.
So
that makes sense.
We're probably the target audience really for trying to get a mortgage sold.
Yeah.
Which is something I've never thought about until right now. AmeriQuest commercials, we liked them. They were successful.
I wrote AmeriPrize in the show notes.
And see, that's
it's the same. It's the same company, right? Like, I don't know what the difference is.
Exactly. But I mean, really, when we're looking for those mortgages in 5 years, if you Google AmeriPrize, I bet AmeriQuest comes up.
Yeah, I think AmeriPrize is a better name than I think AmeriQuest is a better name than AmeriPrize.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
AmeriQuest has a little more kind of earthy feel to it. AmeriPrize kind of feels like an evil company from a futuristic movie of dystopia.
Yeah, like America becomes absorbed.
Yeah, like
and we become a capitalist company and not a nation.
Yeah. You want to talk about the Expendables?
The Expendables.
Do you actually want to talk about this?
Oh, man. So let me preface saying that I went to the Expendables because I had a free pass to go to a movie. And there were all these restrictions on which movie I could and couldn't go to.
Mm-hmm.
It was a whole rigmarole. And so I found out, I made a joke. I said, well, it works for the Expendables too. And my friend looked at me and we decided to go to the Expendables 2 because it was free and because we thought it would be humorous.
Did you think it would be humorous because it's a funny movie? No. Or did you think it would be humorous because you'd be laughing at it? Because
we would be laughing at all of these old hacks trying to still be big action stars.
So So I'm not familiar with the movie. What is the premise of the movie or these old hacks?
The premise of the movie is that Sylvester Stallone leads a gang of rogue type soldiers. And there's this villain who is trying to mine a mountain. He's using like slave labor that he's taking from Russian cities and villages, and he's forcing them into these, you know, labor camp type situations because he's trying to uncover nuclear warheads from the Cold War that are buried inside of this mountain.
Yep.
Sylvester Stallone sort of wants to stay uninvolved from the whole thing, but they have to go do one little job with this villain in the beginning of the episode or the movie.
The episode
and the beginning of the
tells you a little bit about your perception of the quality
really TV show. And there's a young guy that's in Sylvester Stallone's crew that Sylvester Stallone sort of looks after, sort of this weird father son type bond. And the villain kills this younger guy early on, so Sylvester Stallone's after him, like with
and so it's kind of a serious movie then.
Yeah, just vengeance. And then randomly throughout the movie, and I failed to see the connection, Chuck Norris keeps showing up.
Okay.
And he's considered the Lone Wolf, is the name he goes by. And I think his
kinda on the nose.
Name is Walker.
Really?
Yeah, they only said it like once. All right. And I'd have to double check
that. Makes
that.
Sense.
I mean, I was,
all right, so there was kind so of a cameo appearance.
And so many loud noises that, I mean, it was so hard to pay attention, but... Yeah, and there was a scene, like the first scene that he comes into, he just like randomly shows up and like helps out Sylvester Stallone when they're in like tight situations. And he walks up to Sylvester Stallone and they're like chatting like they're old war buddies or something. And just mid-conversation, Sylvester Stallone looks at Chuck Norris and says, "I heard you got bit by a king cobra." And everybody kind of looks at him, and Chuck Norris is, "Yeah, and after 5 painful days, the cobra died."
Oh God.
I was like, "You just wrote a Chuck Norris joke into this movie." The storyline was all over, but I don't know if I've ever seen a movie with more action.
Have you seen the Transformers movies?
I have. I've seen the Transformers movies. They are very close. But I still think... I mean, the first 25 minutes of this movie, nobody even says it's all... It's completely action. There's no, like, setup to why the action is taking place. It's just the Expendables breaking into this, like, military compound to rescue somebody. And you don't know who they're rescuing. You don't know why they're rescuing them. And they're like, they have these big tank machines and they're shooting everybody. And there's like thousands of people shooting back at them. But the 1,000 people obviously do not have any aim whatsoever. It's purely ridiculous.
It's possible that exposition comes from the first one. Because this is the Expendables 2,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I can assume that. I guess I haven't seen the Expendables 1. My friend had seen the Expendables 1, and he was still very confused by what was going on.
All right.
And then the other scene that really bothered me, I guess, was they go to this village where the villain has been taking all of these men from to use as slave laborers. And so the only people left in the village are women and children. And when they come into the city, the women think that they're coming... That the Expendables are bad guys coming to take more people to the mines. And so they start shooting at the Expendables. And Sylvester Stallone says, "They got horrible aim. The best place to stand is right in front of them." And they literally come out behind the vehicles and, like, aren't ducking behind anything. They're standing in front of these women with their arms out.
Oh,
and none of the women are able to hit these men. Just, like, the most sexist.
Which, but is it sexist or is it just none of the people that are shooting at the characters can ever hit them?
They no, like, they're standing right in front of them. And then they sort of, like, the way, I mean, he doesn't, they don't say anything. But, like, the overall feeling is, like, the reason they are bad at shooting at us is because it's 15 women in skirts.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that sounds pretty awful.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. But I thought about it as I left, and I came to the conclusion that I think that the majority of successful, I'm using air quotes around successful in saying action movies that make a lot of money, seem to all usually be pretty bad.
That might hold true. Do you think there's a correlation between action movies that are really bad also being kind of low budget action movies?
No, yeah. Well, I guess most low budget action movies don't do well at the box office, though.
Okay, that makes sense.
But I'm saying, you know, the big box office ones, you know, the Transformers.
Yeah, they made a lot of money with that, didn't
yeah.
they? Did they?
And,
probably did.
Oh, yeah, and The Expendables 2 has Bruce Willis in it, and I don't mm-hmm. really even know why his character ever showed up or what he did.
He's kind of the Qui-Gon Jinn
yeah.
of Expendables 2.
It was, it okay. was one of the seemingly more expensive movies I've seen that is bad.
Have you seen... that movie about some mythological story. They all have to travel into the thing and do the thing. I think they're making a sequel. I'm going to look it up right now.
Is it pretty current?
Thor. Yeah, it came out like last year. It's not Thor because Thor is very much a Marvel.
Yeah,
Thor's Marvel.
I think so.
God, I feel like a dick for not knowing my comic book brands. Thor is Marvel, Batman is DC. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. So it's Greek mythology. I'm looking it up okay. right now, but I'm going to cut this
out. I guess
out.
The one thing that I did enjoy about The Expendables was it's sort of... I wish they would have marketed it as a movie about the Sergeant Fury comic books. I don't know if you ever read those, but... It's basically a comic book about rogue soldiers that had formed a vigilante posse that went around fighting old Russians.
Is that Sergeant Fury? Is that not Nick Fury?
Yeah, that is. That's in
who also put together the Avengers. Isn't Nick Fury the one that put together the Avengers? I feel like if we're going to talk about comic books, we have to know more about what we're.
We
talking
do.
About.
All I know is I read the Sergeant Fury. Like the original comic books from the 70s because my dad read them. And so he just had, you know, like the nickel comics, none of the, you know, mm-hmm. big graphic novels.
None of the good ones.
And so they were just these, you know, 15-page comic books about little situations that Sergeant Fury and his group of rogue soldiers get into and then basically open fire with their machine guns and run free.
I was going to say Clash of the Titans, but this one definitely has Liam Neeson in it, and I don't think it's Clash of the Titans, because I think I saw it in the theater last year.
It, like, not Greek, the gray.
Wrath of the Titans? 2012. It's definitely not Wrath of the Titans. Greek mythology movies 2011.
Immortals. I bet it's Immortals.
Good God, is Immortals a terrible, terrible movie?
That is one of three movies that I did not finish.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't do it. I turned it off.
I'm jealous of you. I'm jealous. Very jealous. Yeah. I rarely don't finish a movie because I... Oh my God. The budget for this movie was $75 million, and in the box office, they made $230 million.
Ooh.
So, this movie is, by all accounts, the worst movie I've ever seen. I think it's even worse than The Room. Although, I bet the budget is like $75 million higher than The Room, so I'm not gonna really, like... Even if it is a little bit better, it's not $75 million better.
Yeah.
Just like so many, and I saw it in the theater with my friends because they wanted to see it. And the whole time, like by 10 minutes in, I wanted to leave. But I didn't. I thought they were enjoying it. And I was like, I'm going to have to lie and say this movie was okay. Or I'm going to have to lie and say that I didn't really like it. Which is way nicer than it deserves. But at the end, it was like they both wanted to leave too, and they thought I was enjoying it. And then I was offended that my friends would possibly think that I could find anything to enjoy in this movie. By the end, it's all these Greek soldiers fighting, and there's gods, and they're flying around, and like you can see the edge of the set so clearly. And the character, like, none of it makes sense. The plot has been off the rails for so long that it's just like random people fighting, and they're poorly, poorly choreographed fights. And then like the main character falls down and his armor falls off, you know, and he's wearing like the big chest plate with the little nipples in it.
Oh yeah.
And it falls and it like bends, and it's so painfully obvious that it's like spray painted like foam. And it's just like, they put absolutely no work into any aspect of this movie.
I mean,
and, like,
I noticed.
I generally don't complain about CG in movies, but
the set. And I'm wondering where all that money, that $70 million, went in the production.
Yeah, I mean, just they smoked it away, I guess. Like, this is just so bad.
Yeah.
And it's from the creators of the 300 or director. It's just the worst movie I've ever seen, bar none.
Yeah. It's pretty bad. I would say it's worse. That movie's worse than The Expendables, although I didn't finish it. So
I'm going. Yeah, like there's no redeeming quality to Immortals. No. It's terrible. The Expendables. Do you think if you went into it expecting it to be kind of bad, yeah, right? All right. So if you had gone into it expecting it to be even worse, or if you were looking for really cheap, cheesy action movie with tons of explosions, would it work or not?
I think it would have. I think it's really I think most people that went into that movie expected it to be sort of a cheesy, poorly acted movie where they could see all of their favorite cheesy old action stars all on one stage.
And then things like calling Chuck Norris's character Walker,
yeah,
and using Chuck Norris jokes work, because that's like the point.
Arnold,
right?
Schwarzenegger's character kept saying, he kept being put in situations where he would say, "I'll be back."
Yeah.
You know, and it was sort of that in,
you
that
know,
sense.
Funny the first 16
kind of
times.
Like the characters knew that it was not a joke, but more of like a tribute than an actual movie itself. However, there were some interviews that I saw with Sylvester Stallone, and he was just absolutely so jacked up about this movie. He actually used my favorite new word, alpha dogism. He said that the movie excited him because it really gave him time to explore the alpha dogism of getting all of these men of this magnitude in one movie.
And I'm sure that doesn't have anything to do with the rampant sexism of the scene you described earlier.
Oh, I know. The alpha dog is...
I'll be honest, so there's a few things, a few movie cliches that I really like. And one of them is a creation story one of the bigger categories is stuff that falls into the creation story. So I really like movies about the creation of heroes. And I also often like the cheesy things that happen. An example of that is like the city banding together to support the hero in the time of need. So like the recent Spider-Man movie,
yeah.
There's the scene where he needs to get to the tower quickly enough, and I'm going to, of course, spoil it. All the crane operators, everyone's evacuating the city, but like some crane operator gets on his walkie-talkie and shouts for all the crane operators to swing their arms into the right spot, and so he can like form a web and shoot across it, right? And like really, really fantastic moment. in any creation story is that moment of like the building of solidarity behind them.
Yeah.
I also really like
becomes part of the superhero in a sense.
Yeah. One of my favorite things in movies is like bringing back the old team.
I love when they gather up the old team when they're going out.
Yeah. God, it's cheesy. It's so cheesy in almost every movie it's done, but I enjoy it so much. And I mean, even little things like in Men in Black 2, when they go like they have to go to like their old weapon cache and it's in some house that some family lives in, and they just stroll into the house and like hit an easy to hit button and like all these crazy guns come flying out of everywhere. And like, it's just like, that's so much fun and kind of, I mean, pretty stupid. It's done a lot, but it's awesome.
Do you, are you familiar with the Mighty Ducks movies?
I have not seen them in many years and I don't remember them at
all. I think the second one.
The slap shot. The second one.
Pretty
powerful.
The third one was pretty bad. But the second one has that where they, the team's getting back together to play in some big national level tournament. And it all starts with like the team captain on his roller skates. And he just roller skates around the town, like gathering like one kid after another. And each kid, when they find them, is like playing roller hockey.
Yeah.
And then, like, by the end, it's climax, and they're all, like, rollerblading through a mall. As a kid, it was one of, like, the greatest scenes.
What could be cooler?
For me.
Like, that's awesome. So, I think there's a movie that actually does it really, really well is, and I'm going to spoil this movie as well, but you should have seen it by now, V for Vendetta.
Oh, yeah.
So, there's the scene towards the end of the movie where V has sent out these masks to all he sent out like 300,000 masks or something to citizens of Britain, and so it's this future dystopia, and he sends out the masks hoping to like inspire people to rebel and stand up for themselves. And then there's just all these scenes of criminals doing things in V masks, and it's cut together really nicely. The inspector is talking to his partner and says something along the lines of, like, this is exactly what he's hoping for. And then there's a fast cut to a guy who's robbing a convenience store. And he shoots his gun up in the air and yells anarchy in the UK. And then, you know, there's lots of powerful things.
I love the scene with the little girl spray painting the anarchy on the wall.
Oh, my God. So she had been spray painting earlier, and you had seen earlier that she wanted to be kind of, it was like she was a rebel, you know, had that childhood innocence, but was rebelling because she didn't know any better.
I think it brought validity to the rebellion in that it was our human nature to not be a part of that utopious society.
And then there's just this fantastic scene where she's running and she's got this mask on and her glasses are like taped on the outside of it, and she's running along and a police officer shoots her in the back, and then you see like all of the citizens around saw this happen, and you're like, it's like, you know, pretty heart-wrenching. He shot a little girl, very sad. You see like the faces of determination, and one of them's holding a pipe, and there's like that moment where now they're rebelling without masks, and like that is probably the moment in the movie where like he's won, right? Like up until that point it was possible for him to fail.
Yeah.
And at that point, enough people have joined the cause. Now they're rebelling without masks. They're rebelling
no matter what. And they now know, they all can see, you know, clearly that this is something that is not only worth fighting for, but necessary to fight for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is...
And then, you know, if you pay attention at the end when they're all... The masses, you know, have gathered in front of Lady Justice, and it explodes, and they all take their masks off to see. You see the girl there taking her mask off, and that's a really nice part as well.
Yeah, I mean that movie is really hard to pick out. Oh, that's a good part because the whole movie is so damn good.
Yeah. All right. So that sums up Episode 2 of The White Horse Courier. You can find us online at thewhitehorsecourier.com. If you add /episodes/2 at that, you'll get our show notes for this episode. You can follow us on Twitter at WHCourier, or me specifically, I'm at Will Imholt.
Or you can follow me at Tom Wixo.
All right, we'll see you next week.
Sounds good. tucked away in boxes, tucked away in drawers. They're all wrinkled up and faded like things I wore. Keep them there, 'cause I still love you even more. They're all I find when I don't find what I'm looking for. A broken heart's an awful way to win a war. We both lose and people die, who's keeping score? Who will build memorials? What will they be for? At least there won't be any fighting anymore. Love the one you're with, and hold the one you're near. She's not the one for you, but at least she's here. So keep your sidewalk clear and the light on the door. And don't give up on love, love more. Find some distant shore. Alone or with the ghosts of those whose arms held yours. Remember her, 'cause she's the one you came here for. But this is not a place where she would be. She wanted more. So love the one you're with, and hold the one you're near. She's not the one for you, but at least she's here. So keep your sidewalk clear and the light on the door. Don't give up on love, love more.